Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Gantos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is kind of an interesting day, being the, the first day of a new month, February. We seem to be moving into the same uncharted waters that we have been in recent months. Fascinating story today in CNN that's been repeated by the AP, and that is that there are Senate foes of the Bush troop buildup that are joining forces. Very interesting to see here that we have exactly what Ron Paul and Paul Craig Roberts have been talking about, and that is the fact that when it comes to these so-called forces up on Capitol Hill that are talking about opposing the war in Iraq and opposing the troop surge, that opposition is absolutely on paper. It's absolutely choreographed political opportunity and positioning that has nothing to do with reality whatsoever. And the latest thing here, of course, is Senator John Warner, a Republican from Virginia, and Carl Levin, a Michigan Democrat, have been sponsoring competing measures opposing Bush's strategy of sending 21,500 more U.S. troops to the war zone. Warner's version is allegedly less harshly worded, whatever that's supposed to mean, attracting more Republican interest. The fact of the matter is that the new resolution would vow to protect funding for troops while keeping Warner's original language expressing the Senate's opposition to the buildup. This is completely absurd, obviously, for as Paul Craig Roberts has told us and as Ron Paul has told us and others that are honest analysts of these kinds of things in the American news media and the American political scene, there's only one thing that is going to stop this troop buildup. There's only one thing that is going to reverse course in terms of this disastrous policy in Iraq. There's only one thing that is going to keep a wider war from taking place with Iran, and that is that people who actually oppose these policies for real, who happen to occupy a seat up on Capitol Hill, either in the House or the Senate, must begin the process of moving forward with actual attempts to defund this war, and of course actual attempts to impeach the president if he continues in moving in a direction that is contrary to the national interest of the country and quite clearly contrary to the Constitution of the United States. This is where Russ Feingold, it seems to me, of Wisconsin, is on much more solid ground in that he is actually talking about a legitimate move to defund this entire process. Watch this whole thing very closely because you can be absolutely sure that there is going to be no serious attempt on Capitol Hill, despite the honest attempts of a couple of people. I think Feingold appears to be sincere on this in regard to the Senate. Someone like Ron Paul is clearly sincere on this in the House of Representatives. But with the exception of a few champions like this who are in very isolated situations, it's quite clear that there will be no serious attempt to defund this thing. Neither will there be a serious attempt to impeach the president. Absolutely no attempt at all, in all likelihood, based upon the fact that Nancy Pelosi had indicated that this whole thing was off the table. And she said that right in the time frame, just prior to or just after the first Tuesday in November. So this is what's going on. You have a series of people attempting to say that they oppose this neoconservative direction in foreign policy, where at the same time they do absolutely nothing to threaten its funding, and nothing to threaten the political survivability of the main architects of this policy. It is interesting, isn't it, to watch the kinds of things going on with the so-called major political candidates in both parties in this country. John Edwards, and this has been something that's been talked about recently in the Jewish Daily Forward and other places, John Edwards is simply the latest in a series of announced presidential candidates who have begun doing their obeisance act in Tel Aviv to ensure that the real masters of American foreign policy, who happen to be Jewish and happen to be stationed on both sides of the Atlantic, continue to have their absolute sway over what the U.S. does, both in this country and abroad. Stay tuned for that one over a period of time in the weeks and months ahead. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, and the Republic Broadcasting Network.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com.
At rbnlive.com, you'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities and the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge. That's right. Unlike other services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listeners to the Republic Broadcasting Network and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of information. Stay connected to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We began this hour by looking at this rather interesting story in CNN today, and it's something that's being repeated by the Associated Press, and that is this notion that there are so-called Senate foes of the Bush troop buildup. And of course, this is talking about the so-called John Warner Carl Levin compromise that will be a rival to the McCain-Graham benchmark proposal. So this is the basic Hegelian dialectic, of course, that's being set up in the establishment news media to give the American people the impression that there's a serious debate going on in Washington when it comes to this policy. And quite clearly, it's all positioning, absolute positioning. I think it's fairly clear that McCain and Graham want to engage in a support the troops policy, as Mr. Bush understands that term, and to basically support the committing of more American lives and American treasures into this tragedy. But suffice it to say that to the extent that there is an opposition, that so-called opposition is for positioning only. This is a non-binding statement. These so-called leading Republicans and Democrats that are talking about a resolution against the troop increase, the emphasis here is non-binding. What is a non-binding statement? That, in essence, is nothing more than a series of people wanting to politically position themselves against this war, because the latest polls suggest that anywhere from two-thirds to three-quarters of the American people are now beginning to figure out that something is seriously wrong with this situation, and that there seems to be no clear strategy to end this thing or to bring it to an appropriate resolution. That in turn begs another question. Is this because we have simply had inadequate boots in the ground in the implementation of this policy, or is that because the policy itself is absolutely untenable? That's another aspect of this, in addition to the fact that the so-called nine non-binding resolutions have no strength of force whatsoever in terms of actually getting the administration to alter its course, actually putting the United States Congress on record as being in opposition to what's going on. But that also gets into the next aspect of this, and that is the whole issue itself of the policy. To his credit, the former Army Chief of Staff, Eric Shinseki, and this is something that Dr. Richard Cummings talked about on this show on Monday, General Shinseki had indicated at the outset of this outlandish situation, almost 4 years ago now, that it would take a minimum of a quarter of a million troops in Iraq to successfully implement an occupation strategy subsequent to the cessation of the traditional military operations that were in the process of being launched. I would say, however, that Shinseki's estimate, while it's certainly a lot better looking now, and at the time I felt was better looking than what was being talked about by Rumsfeld and company, the fact of the matter is that we still have to get back to the fundamental question. Was intervention in that country militarily something that was in the interests of the people of the United States? Is it something that Congress passed muster on in terms of a constitutionally tested congressional declaration of war? Quite clearly, I would answer in the negative in both of those ways. And when we look at Shinseki's troop proposal statements of almost 4 years ago now, it becomes abundantly clear that when we look at the broader historical context of all of this, that even General Shinseki's more reasonable estimates about the difficulty that would ensue on the ground once we intervened in Iraq, it nonetheless pales when we look at the problems that the British had in the 1920s in Mesopotamia, when my old friend Marty Callahan of Valparaiso University, who is now a very fine film producer, has pointed out in his new film on World War I and the British and their entire situation in the Middle East in the wake of World War I, that the British could not successfully implement what they were trying to do in that part of the world with a million troops. A million troops, folks. That is four times the number of troops that General Shinseki was recommending 4 years ago. So while Shinseki looks certainly better than Rumsfeld and some of the other folks that were indicating that all of this could be done for 135,000 or with 135 to 150,000 troops, nonetheless, we see that historically there is a much, much wider problem, much more serious problem with this policy of intervention. Clearly it's the case, not simply in terms of what the British failed to do in Mesopotamia and Palestine, with at various points in the previous century, something right around a million men under force of arms. But we're also looking at the Soviet Union as a very ominous test case in Afghanistan. You know, regardless of what you think of the Soviet Union, and obviously as an anti-communist, I wouldn't think too much of the Soviet Union historically. The fact of the matter is that the Soviet armed forces, one suspects, would be a very formidable force if committed in mass to any given situation. Obviously, when they went into Afghanistan, they were committed to what they believed to be in the national interests of the Soviet Union in committing to that situation. Nonetheless, as my old friend Dr. Abbas Bakhtiar has pointed out repeatedly, the Soviets had 300,000 troops in Afghanistan. How does that stack up with 20,000 American troops there now and approximately 20,000 NATO troops. Quite clearly, there is a force disparity there as well. What happened? What happened to the Soviet Union in Afghanistan? Well, we all know the story of that, not simply in terms of the fact that they could not implement an occupation policy of that country. It was impossible. History, military dynamics, geography, economics, and international public opinion, and all kinds of things would suggest that the Soviets should have rethought the committing of that many ground troops to Afghanistan. They also should have had a wider historical perspective on what has happened to other empires in world history, including the British, who decided to get involved in Afghanistan and who believed that they could subdue it. The Soviets were not paying much attention to historical analysis, it seems to me, when they went in there during the early days of the Carter administration. Suffice it to say that at the by the same token, the United States has not paid any attention to the recent example of the Soviet Union in Afghanistan, either in terms of the unsustainability of a long-term military occupation of that country by an outside force, not to mention the fact that it seems to me that the whole situation with Afghanistan, as far as the Soviet Union is concerned, was one of the major nails in the coffin that resulted in the dissolution of that empire. That's something that bears repeating when it comes to the present-day American historical experience, both in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And there we have gone full circle once again to what Kevin Phillips has talked about in his book, American Theocracy. I have a review of that book on my website at www.markdankoff.com. I have two or three other book reviews in recent times that I am behind on that I plan on posting, including a review of Dilip Hero's book, The Iranian Labyrinth, from 2 years ago. That book is 2 years old, yet I think because of the importance of the information that's in it and the fact that Hero was a guest on this show not all that many days ago talking about his new book, Blood of the Earth, that essentially these book reviews all show something, and I think Kevin Phillips has talked about this in particular in his book, American Theocracy, and that is that there is a dangerous assumption being made by American policymakers. It's an assumption that's being bandied about by both sides of the political aisle on Capitol Hill, who are both sides of the same one-party counterfeit coin. It quite clearly is something that has influenced the thinking or lack of thinking of the president and his chief neoconservative advisors, and that's the whole business of exceptionalism. What is the doctrine of exceptionalism? It seems to me that basically it's this, that somehow, some way, a particular person, a particular country, a particular empire is an exception to the laws and axioms that govern the way that the universe runs as far as natural law, or that governs the affairs of nations in terms of what we see of this both as far as secular and biblical history is concerned. The assumption is very, very much there on the part of these neoconservatives that the policies of the United States, which are taking us down the same road as the former Soviet Union, the same road as Imperial Britain, are somehow policies that will not result in an identical outcome for the United States. Why? Because of the doctrine of exceptionalism, the notion that we are somehow deified, that we are somehow different, that somehow all of the rules that govern the rise and fall of empires throughout history do not apply to the United States. We are the exception. We are the exception to the rule. That plays also into certain of the presuppositions that I see going on when it comes to Israeli foreign policy, the notion that in their minds they are the exception to the rule in regard to the ramifications of what they've been doing since 1947. Quite clearly, some of this plays into notions as well in among religious theocrats that the United States and Israel are the exceptions to the rule, because somehow we are, individually and collectively, God's chosen people. Are we the exception, or are we simply to be the latest in a series of fatalities that occur when we ignore history? Mark Gancoff's America will be back. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Back. This is Mark Gancoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We've been spending the first part of the first hour of this show talking about this absolutely ludicrous situation taking place up on Capitol Hill, where you have the establishment press reporting that there are now Senate foes of the Bush troop buildup. Quite clearly, this statement is non-binding. Quite clearly, the so-called Warner-Levin compromise will do absolutely nothing to defund the situation, will do absolutely nothing to launch any investigations regarding how this whole disastrous policy began to begin with, will do absolutely nothing to stop the committing of these 21,500 troops to Iraq and anything else that may follow thereafter. If you get a chance, as we are discussing this story before we move on to some other news stories this morning, to look more closely at this lead corporate news media entity at CNN.com. There's a very fascinating AP photograph there. If you look at that photograph, which is to the top left of the main text of the AP byline out of Washington, it's a very, very curious example of the type of game playing that goes on in these types of situations, that the corporate media loves this sort of thing. They perpetrate it upon the American people. The American people, at least up to now, have tended to buy this sort of thing without seeing just how cosmetically fraudulent the whole thing is. This photograph shows Senator Carl Levin and Senator John McCain together. They are allegedly opponents in terms of this whole issue of Bush's military surge in Iraq, and yet they look very chummy in this AP photograph. There's a third person in that photo, Admiral William Fallon. We've talked about this guy in recent days on this show. Pat Buchanan and Paul Craig Roberts and others have discussed the implications of Admiral Fallon's appointment to take over CENTCOM, or the so-called Central Command in Florida, that has been administering this military effort in Iraq since March of 2003. Admiral Fallon is, of course, coming over to CENTCOM from Hawaii, where he had been the SINCPAC, or the Commander-in-Chief of all Pacific Forces. That is a job that was held by Senator McCain's father back when I was going to high school in Hawaii years ago. It was a job held by Admiral Chester Nimitz of Fredericksburg, Texas, during World War II in the immediate days after the Pearl Harbor debacle. Suffice it to say that Admiral William Fallon, who has been our most recent SINCPAC, he suddenly leaves Hawaii. He is made the head of CENTCOM. And there has never been before, to anyone's knowledge, a Navy admiral who headed up that particular command. It's always been an Army general. And ostensibly, anyone taking over the CENTCOM command would, one would presume, have a professional resume that would be particularly attuned to the particulars of a land occupation and a war of counterinsurgency of the type that we're dealing with in Iraq. And again, would be intimately familiar with all of the kinds of things that are expected of the infantry in regard to something of this magnitude. But he is a Navy admiral. His expertise and his resume, if you read even what's out there in the public wire services about Admiral Fallon, quite clearly deals with Navy aviation. He was a naval aviator in Vietnam. He is apparently an expert, and one would presume that this would be true of a Navy admiral, in the whole issue of keeping sea lanes open. Pat Buchanan, Paul Craig Roberts, and others have made the point that this gentleman's resume, Admiral William Fallon's resume, strongly matches not what we're presently doing in Iraq, but what we may soon be doing with Iran in regard to carrier-based airstrikes against Iranian nuclear power stations and the whole business of trying to keep the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz specifically free from any obstructionist activities on the part of the Iranians or anyone else who may oppose an American preemptive attack on that country. What is the point? The point is that Admiral William Fallon's appointment to be the head of CENTCOM would suggest that an attack on Iran is the real reason why he has been appointed to that post and has been brought over from the SINCPAC role in Hawaii. If that's the case, it is a particularly ominous development. And yet here you have a situation where Senator Levin and Senator McCain are shown Tuesday, yesterday, in a photograph with Admiral William Fallon. This is an AP photo that one can find at CNN.com. And these guys all look very friendly with one another. Very interesting, isn't it, that McCain and Levin are supposedly big rivals in this whole issue of whether or not there needs to be a surge in conventional forces in Iraq. And yet these guys look like they've been out for a cup of coffee with one another, and they are joined by a Navy admiral that more prescient commentators believe is an integral part of what seems to be a widen-the-war strategy when it comes to attacking Iran. What's behind all of this, folks? Is it pro wrestling all over again? This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stay Gone uses all-natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stay Gone must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stay Gone risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestaygone.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill. It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The Bedfan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com. Your provider for great sleep.
Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're going to be joined in the last hour of the show this morning, which will be from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, by a very interesting woman that I went to college with about 30 years ago. Her name is Patricia Hero, and she was an independent candidate in the state of New Jersey, dealing with such issues as eminent domain in her campaign last fall. Going to be interesting to talk with her because she is not what you would call someone who would be an across-the-board America firster, like most of us who listen to this network and most of the hosts and so forth. But she has a lot of fascinating things to say, and we're going to chat for an hour or so toward the end of the show between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. I'm in the process, by the way, of building up a list of future guests for this show. That's something that I'm really going to be working on this weekend, because there are all kinds of things that we need to be looking at as far as Mark Dankos America is concerned. And some of the folks that I hope to bring to the fore on this show are people who can help you and me to cut through the maze of what is going on with corporate media and what is going on with the American political establishment. Quite obviously, none of these things have any utility whatsoever for most of us, and we need to have a much better perception of what's going on in the world from the right people in alternative media and from the right people who have been advising us for years in terms of taxes, the Federal Reserve Board, interventionist foreign policy, the American domestic police state, and all of the other things that quite clearly have gotten a great deal of boost as a result of the events of the last 5 or 6 years. Not likely to be much of a change in this, as near as I can tell. And this is not surprising at all that there would be no change in this since the first Tuesday in November, because we basically have a one-party system. And clearly the AP byline today out of Washington that is reported upon at CNN.com, where you see the so-called Senate foes of the Bush troop buildup joining forces. Quite obvious, isn't it, that this is nothing more than political posturing. It has absolutely nothing to do whatsoever with any serious change in the situation going on in this country in regard to a move toward a preemptive war with Iran and the ongoing activity of the Israeli lobby in regard to what is going on in the Middle East as well as domestically. I've been looking at a number of things in the corporate news media that are interesting for conversation. If you get a chance to look at the Wall Street Journal today on February 1st, there are two or three blurbs in the major American press, in this particular case the Wall Street Journal, that are well worth your time, not simply as far as what is being said, but as far as what is not being said. The Wall Street Journal reports, for example, that there is a report that says that tens of millions of dollars in Iraq aid were wasted. This is not a news story, it seems to me. We've been reading about this at Truthout. We've been reading about this at Alternet. We've been reading about this at Breaking All the Rules News and some of the other very fine alternative news agencies left and right that have been pointing us to this story ever since the war started. But the Wall Street Journal is saying today that a quarterly audit released by the U.S. Inspector for Rebuilding found that the U.S. war and reconstruction effort continues to be plagued by violence, waste, and corruption. Meanwhile, the bodies of three Sunni professors and a student were found days after they were seized leaving their campus. Iraq halted flights to and from Syria and closed a border crossing with Iran as the government prepares for a security crackdown. Kissinger and Albright, folks, urged Bush to go beyond a planned buildup of U.S. forces in Iraq to develop a comprehensive strategy for the area. Boy, there's an awful lot that is contained in that single paragraph on the front page of this morning's Wall Street Journal. Suffice it to say that this is one of the stories that there is no further linkage to elsewhere in the paper. If you don't read the Wall Street Journal, and there's plenty of reason not to read it, I read these publications because they give me an idea as to what corporate media is saying. Suffice it to say that where they have these paragraph summaries, that in the case of those stories that they wish to emphasize, there will be a page listed that will enable you to go beyond the paragraph summary to a more detailed discussion of that particular story. What is fascinating is to look at those paragraphs on the front page of today's Wall Street Journal, where there is no corresponding connection to a page that goes into greater detail. In today's paper, this is the case with the paragraph that I just read. Why is it that there is no further discussion of this report on the waste of tens of millions of dollars in Iraq aid? You read that paragraph on page one of this morning's Wall Street Journal, there will be no connection to any other page or section that will give the reader a more detailed account of this report. It simply says that there's a quarterly audit released by the U.S. Inspector for Rebuilding, found that the U.S. war and reconstruction effort continues to be plagued by violence, waste, and corruption. Yet, This quarterly audit is simply referred to in the front page of the Wall Street Journal. We are not given any of the particulars elsewhere in the publication in regard to who some of the major players are in this corruption and some of the specific dollar figures that are attached to those major players, at least as far as this quarterly audit released by the U.S. Inspector for Rebuilding is concerned. Why is that? Could it be that the Wall Street Journal, which of course is the epitome of corporate America, does not want the American public to read the specific figures and the names of the specific players that are thought to be involved in this waste and corruption? I think that simply begs the question, doesn't it? Also, the question of Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright. Of course, these are people who are familiar to most of us and familiar to us for all of the wrong reasons. Ms. Albright has said a lot of incredible things in recent years, including the fact that 500,000 deaths of Iraqi children under the age of five as a result of these as a result of the sanctions regimen that was imposed on that country in an attempt to destabilize and depose Saddam Hussein, that the deaths of those 500,000 children were worth it, in the words of the ex-Secretary of State. An absolutely incredible statement that pales in comparison to what she might be a part of in the future in regard to deaths in that region. But suffice it to say that this is the type of an individual that we're talking about. Mr. Kissinger's exploits in the foreign policy arena in regard to the implementation of plans for corporate America and personally profiting from those plans is a matter of record. And yet they are now saying that Mr. Bush should go beyond a planned buildup of U.S. forces in Iraq to develop a comprehensive strategy for the area. What does that phrase mean, folks? Comprehensive strategy for the area. Well, there are a couple of things in mind here as I read the front page of the Wall Street Journal this morning when it whacked up against my door at about 6 a.m. Central Standard Time. The fact is that it seems to me that before you commit troops to a war, before you commit a country to an interventionist policy in a foreign country, that it might be a good idea to have a comprehensive strategy and rationale for that policy in place from the get-go. Kissinger and Albright, by their very verbiage, are suggesting that that comprehensive strategy was not in place prior to now and needs to be developed. Here we are, folks, all these casualties later, the destruction of all of this political and economic infrastructure in Iraq. We have spent close to $500 million in this effort, and that total continues to mount. And here are two establishment figures on the part of the American foreign policy regime saying that we need to develop a comprehensive strategy. Why wasn't it there to begin with? It seems to me that that's the first question in play. The second thing is, where were all of these foreign policy experts, quote-unquote, prior to March of 2003? And more importantly, where is the United States Congress in all of this? Isn't it curious, again, going back to the first corporate media story that we looked at the top of the hour, that in this AP byline from Washington that is being reported by CNN.com this morning, that this so-called opposition, so-called opposition to the surge policy in Iran, or in Iraq, sorry, is coming to us courtesy of John Warner and Carl Levin. Where were these guys 4 years ago, along with so many other folks on Capitol Hill who were there at that time? They were absolutely nowhere to be found. And here we are 4 years later with people like Levin and Warner trying to say that we don't have a policy in place. We need to have one. They allegedly oppose this troop surge, allegedly are concerned about the entire direction that things seem to be going over there, and yet there is absolutely no attempt, it seems to me, not only to defund this policy, not only to demand certain answers in regard to what is being planned for Iran quite clearly, particularly with the appointment of Admiral Fallon to be the head of CENTCOM, but the other issue in play here is why are there no present calls on Capitol Hill for a complete reexamination of who got us into this? who got us into this and why, and for those people to be held to particular accountability before the American public, politically and legally and morally. No talk of that at all, it seems to me, from anyone serious up there on the Hill in regard to saying that, hey, we have had now the biggest debacle, arguably, in the history of American foreign and military policy. This debacle has us in a dangerous, dangerous state of overexposure throughout the world. Who's responsible for this? Let's get them up here before an open forum and start asking all of the tough questions and doing the kinds of things that a Congress of the U.S. needs to be doing to hold people to account for actions that end up hurting the American people and end up hurting the American nation. None of that emanating from Capitol Hill, it seems to me. And quite clearly, this photograph that I was talking about, which shows Senator Levin and Senator Warner, along with Admiral Fallon, everything looks pretty cozy and comfortable up there on Capitol Hill to me, with the exception of a couple of principal people, possibly Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, certainly Ron Paul of Texas on the Republican side of the aisle in the House. With the exception of a couple of fighters like this, it just seems to be absolutely a question of business as usual. But take a look at that report today in the paragraph summaries of the Wall Street Journal. We've got this quarterly audit. We've talked about it's talking about the waste of tens of millions of dollars. Kissinger and Albright talking about this nonsense of developing a comprehensive strategy for the area. And yet with all of this, when it comes to the basics of this report, the Wall Street Journal is not providing any specifics whatsoever on the front page or anywhere else today in this publication in regard to who and what was behind this and what it means. Another news story, of course, that you are familiar with if you've been watching anything in the news in the last 24 hours or so. German prosecutors said they issued arrest warrants for 13 CIA operatives suspected of kidnapping a German citizen in 2004, the most serious challenge to date of secret transfers of terrorism suspects. That's going to be something worth watching. How far are the Germans going to take this? Will we learn any more about these 13 CIA operatives? Will we learn any more in the corporate press about the circumstances that surrounded this gentleman's kidnapping and his subsequent alleged torture? Keep an eye on that story, not simply in terms of the fact that there needs to be more pressure, obviously, put on all of the right people in demanding some answers in regard to this policy of extraordinary rendition, among a series of other things that suggest that a full-blown police state is underway in its development in this country as well as in Europe. But in that whole process of extraordinary rendition, it will be interesting to see the extent to which any of this sees the light of day in regard to the past and the present and the future. Again, something like this can appear in the corporate press, but suffice it to say that most of the details, if not all of the details, are yet to come out, will probably never come out. And it fundamentally begs the question, if we are talking about a specific instance of where someone was illegally detained in his own country at the hands of a foreign intelligence service, subsequently secretly transferred to yet another location abroad where he allegedly was the recipient of torture mechanisms and techniques administered by a state security service. If all of that is in fact true, it begs the question as to how that is compatible with certainly the American constitutional tradition, not to mention any of the applicable laws related to the international community, as well as the country of Germany and the so-called European Union. What does it portend for the days ahead? Clearly, there is a body of opinion in this country that simply trusts centralized government to do the right thing in any given circumstance. Why anyone would assume this, given the track record of our own government just since the end of World War II, is beyond me, but there are lots of folks who feel that way. They ought to take a closer look at the implications of this story, for it seems to me that with what we know, the bare cursory facts as they have emerged in recent days and weeks on this thing coming out of Germany, suggest that a grave mistake, an outlandish mistake, was made in this particular case. How many other cases of this type are there that are out there that we don't know about and may never know about? That seems to me to be the most fascinating and ominous aspect of that report, which was in most of the major electronic journals yesterday. If you happen to watch CNN or the BBC or any of the major news networks, we're seeing reference to it in this morning's Wall Street Journal on the front page. But again, very little of the specifics yet emerging in regard to this case. And I suspect that in the days ahead, we may hear absolutely less and less about this story. Hope I'm wrong, because I think the implications of that one are absolutely critical for you and for me, particularly if you're looking at the Wall Street Journal this morning and going down just a few paragraphs. I circled this one at 6 o'clock this morning. The Justice Department released secret documents detailing the government's domestic spying program. They released those documents to top lawmakers, but didn't satisfy some demands for information. When we come back to Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network, we might take a look at that paragraph a little bit more closely before we go on to some other news stories that directly affect you and me in the days ahead. Stay tuned.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who is responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're taking a look at a number of news stories today, both corporate media as well as non-establishment media, dealing with what seems to be a movement toward a full-blown Third World War, in my view, in the next year to two. Let's hope I'm wrong, and I'm always open to the fact that I might be wrong, and in some cases have been wrong in things that I've said over the years, as we all have had that experience. But unfortunately, up to this point, I've been absolutely correct in regard to what has happened since March of 2003, and that would suggest that I'm likely to be correct in regard to what I think is happening between now and where we will be by the beginning of 2008. Not a good direction. And it's important that we see absolutely how unreliable corporate media is in regard to ever telling the truth. Quite clearly, the establishment political scene is not answering the questions, the fundamental questions of the day in regard to this war and who's really behind it. And that, in turn, has led to a situation where quite clearly the so-called Warner Levin proposal, non-binding proposal, to force a reassessment of Bush's Iraq policy is another example of the fact that there can and will be no political change in this country on the Middle Eastern question or anything else in the wake of the first Tuesday in November. That frustration is a frustration at one level that's very frightening in regard to the destabilization of people's trust in their institutions. But that destabilization of trust is absolutely warranted, given what we see going on. And it suggests that there is a silver lining in that cloud if that destabilization in trust results in the beginning of a movement toward a more populist, non-globalist, non-establishment political alternative in this country, both in domestic policy as well as foreign policy. Number of other interesting stories that are worth taking a look at today. Have you seen Israel Shamir's piece entitled Carter and the Swarm? This has been out for a number of days, and it discusses all of the things that surround the brouhaha over Jimmy Carter's book on Palestine and the Palestinian issue. You can find this piece at Israel Shamir's own site, which is entitled The Writings of Israel Shamir, Championing Democracy for Israel and Palestine. This is a particularly good piece because it goes into the whole question of why Jimmy Carter wrote this book at this particular time. Why did he write this book? What are the implications of it? Is there anything positive that will emerge from his having written this book? And what is the whole spin on this thing? This is, I think, an interesting piece. I happen to believe that Carter's book has one enduring value, and it's not simply what he said, but what the response has been on the part of certain people to his book, which suggests the real players in the wider problems of the day in regard to who and what is behind this war, what their influence is on our domestic and foreign policy, and what it will mean for you and me if that is not altered. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll take a look at that story when we come back. You can also give me a call at 1-800-313-9443. Stay tuned.